The Morning Rush podcast is brought to you by Bud Light. Stock up with Bud Light for game days and check out Budweiser's limited edition Freedom Reserve. Please drink responsibly.
They're going to run and get that boot.
This game's still alive and the Hawks have a first down.
Who wants to talk football?
It's Ronnie Wingo, number 20. Touchdown, Arkansas.
They talked the bar.
This is the Bud Light Morning Rush podcast.
Tommy, it's good to see you. I know you had Friday off, and we had our thoughts and prayers with you whole situation. But how'd the weekend go?
The weekend was kind of a slow paced, fun filled weekend. But yesterday was all about watching some golf and Tigers. So that kind of took up all of yesterday. Saturday was great. Just watching, watching a few games and watching some golf and some NFL, but just kind of kicking back and relaxing. And what I guess now two Saturdays left, or three Saturdays from now, we will be playing football. So we're running out of weekends, man. We're running out of weekends.
19 days until
which is great in one sense, and if you work every Saturday during football season, is terrible in another. But I'm ready for football to start.
Yeah, and all of a sudden goes from a 5-day work weekend to a 6-day work week. So, but that's fine. That's the exciting part about it. Fast paced.
Why we do this?
That's right. It's always keeping busy, and the excitement is surely upon us dealing with that.
How about you guys? Were y'all tigered up yesterday?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
I think that capped. I mean, it's the first weekend centered around golf where the group text messages were going and the people, people were on social media really going. You can say what you want about Tiger, and I'm always amazed at the negativity people have about the coverage of Tiger. You read these things that people put on Twitter or Facebook or whatever about, well, yeah, he's 7 back, but that's all they want to talk about. Yeah, because that's all anybody wants to talk about.
That's right.
And then yesterday he's right in the mix, down the stretch, couldn't get over the hump. I'll be interested to see when CBS's ratings come out for this. Now, it's not going to be NFL numbers, but by golf comparison, I bet the numbers for this yesterday, because he was in the mix the whole way. He was always within a stroke or two of the lead, 3 strokes of the lead the whole stretch. I think that the ratings for golf will be up, clearly double-digit percentage points. I can't imagine it would be anything other than that for the Sunday round. Compared to a year ago in the PGA Championship.
I always take it as when you go on social media, I know that's the best indicator, but if I see people that I follow and that I know, who I know that don't watch golf or don't tweet about golf or whatever, and I'm sitting there watching yesterday's final round and I see them tweeting about it and tweeting about Tiger, that's when I know, this is a big deal.
Well, I've got some buddies that had a couple group text messages going, and some friends of mine that they're big football fans, they're big basketball fans. They don't really play golf on a regular basis. One guy doesn't play golf at all, and he's all in on this. I mean, he's all about what's Tiger going to do, and group texting about golf. Well, golf's not a sport that I've ever heard from him one comment ever. So that's the power that guy's brand has.
Yeah. No, and
unbelievable.
I got people tweeting at me yesterday just saying they don't understand all the Tiger coverage and the Tiger love. It's like, dude, there is nobody, you can even make the argument in history of golf, that's been able to transcend the sport where it's bigger than just, because there's a lot of people, I guarantee you, and I'm sure this is exactly what we're talking about, that were watching that final round that hadn't watched any other rounds of golf all weekend long, or maybe not even all season long.
You could make the case he's bigger than LeBron, and follow me on this.
Okay.
When LeBron plays, that doesn't get necessarily non-NBA fans to tune in. Just because LeBron, and there are some that will watch the NBA finals just because LeBron is in it. But not to the numbers, or not to the percentage, or not to, and I know more people will go to the TV for the NBA just because basketball is more popular. But Tiger does more for his sport, more 100%. Of a draw for his sport is where I'm coming from.
Mm-hmm.
To be the rising tide that lifts all boats, far more than Jordan or LeBron has done for their sports. Who doesn't need as much of a rising tide comparatively? But what Tiger is able to do for his sport when he's in the mix versus what other iconic superstars, Brady, LeBron. I mean, who would be bigger names or equal names right now in sports? I can't think of. There's probably, Ronaldo or somebody in soccer, but there's not many. It's a short list by definition. But what Tiger does for his sport when he's in the mix like he was yesterday is greater than anyone else on the planet.
I can't think of anyone comes close. I mean, what would golf look like right now without Tiger Woods? If old, Tiger Woods didn't exist.
Not old, but just boring.
Yeah.
White and boring.
Yeah. I mean, that was exactly what it would look like.
And listen, Tiger didn't lose the tournament yesterday. Brooks Koepka won it.
Koepka
didn't buckle. He kept striping the driver, which is, we get into breaking down what happened with Tiger. It's amazing. He shot a 64 and couldn't find a fairway in the front nine. But Koepka just steady Eddie, right down the middle, put it in the fairway, rarely got himself in trouble. And the pressure, the roars, knowing Tiger's, prowling, never fazed him. Koepka won the tournament. Tiger didn't lose it.
Oh, in fact, Tiger put together one of the best final rounds of golf he's had in forever.
In fact, you could say Tiger had a little bit of a choke with the drive on 17 when he had to have a drive in the fairway, when the pressure was on his swing to come through and deliver, to put you in play on the easiest hole on the course, where you knew you had to have a birdie and maybe put yourself in a position to have an eagle putt to really tighten the screws a little bit. What'd he do? He bananaed it right. Lucky to not be in the hazard. He was in the hazard, but not in the water. And made a heck of a five from where he was at off the tee. But, you could make the case that Tiger was the one that bent yesterday when the pressure was on.
He certainly did. And just hearing the roar of the crowds anytime he made a birdie or anything like that, it's just... That's the excitement you miss from Tiger because it's been so long. And I think that's what
makes golf exciting.
That's right. And I think that's what makes people even more invested in wanting to see him succeed is because they're wanting the comeback story. They're wanting that to be the part of the legacy of Tiger Woods.
They're wanting golf to be exciting again.
Make golf fun again in a lot of people's eyes.
Right. And I think for a lot of years, Tiger was so uncomfortable. Obviously he had the health problems in his back and following the very public display of his personal life, he was just, to me, seemed uncomfortable about what fans and what the public perceived of him and what they thought of him. And then after his round, when he walked across those sky bridges and the cameras followed him and he waved to the crowd, and the crowds were just, wanting more. That ought to give him a more than clear indication of how the golf public feels about Tiger Woods at this point. All of that stuff that happened 10 years ago is certainly water well under the bridge.
So after yesterday, does Tiger win another major?
I think so.
I think he does, too.
I think I think it could certainly be at Augusta. Of course, when you look at the majors this year, he didn't make the cut at the Open. He played okay, middle of the pack at the Masters. He played obviously better at the Open, and then in the PGA was his best finish. But the Masters traditionally has been the major where he has played the best consistently. Even years where he didn't compete in the other three, at Augusta he was, in the top 10 or so. But that was kind of before he got this back all straightened out. So, yes, I do think he wins again. Then the conversation of does he ever catch Jack gets wound up again. I don't think he ever does that. I think at the age of – he'll be 43 the day before. He was born one day before me. He's born December 30th of 75. I was born the next day. Obviously, I missed out on – I was in the wrong line somewhere in there in the golf talent line. But, he'll be 43 this year. At some point, Father Time catches up. Now, I think Tiger could be potentially down the road the first guy to win. What's the oldest? 48 to win a major, I believe it is. 48 years old. I could see Tiger competing and winning at 50. But it's just not, the odds are stacked high against you.
I mean, he looked good. I know he couldn't drive in the very beginning, and he struggled with that. But those shots he was having out of the rough, out of the bunker, I mean, it was just incredible.
He shot 64 and scrambled the entire front nine. His iron play was incredible.
I mean, just vintage Tiger Woods. I mean, that's
No, because vintage Tiger Woods doesn't put the ball off the tee out of the fairway that often.
Well, yeah, okay. I'm saying, but as far as just his play of some of the shots he was hitting,
yeah,
in those tough situations,
his 9-iron was on fire yesterday. Yeah.
I mean, he couldn't be stopped. And that's, it was just so, and it was almost funny because it's like, I found myself rooting against Brooks Koepka, like hoping that he would choke a hole away. And there's a lot of people like that. And it feels weird and it probably sounds bad, but I was one of those people like, please choke Brooks because I want Tiger to win. I just want to see it happen. See the reactions from everybody.
I think you'll see it again.
I do too. I do too. One can hope. But he's making golf exciting again.
Isn't it? And I know we got to run, but isn't it amazing? What is it now? 0-66 and come from behinds in majors? That Tiger of not holding the 54-hole lead? I mean, that's one thing Jack, I think, did 8 times was what I read yesterday. That is an amazing stat that Tiger Woods cannot come from behind on a Sunday and hasn't anywhere in his career. Now, that speaks to the dominance he had in the first 10 years of his career and how he didn't have to come from behind because he always held the 54-hole lead. He was in the lead or tied for the lead and always went on to win when he had that. But coming from behind, not been done before.
Arkansas's home for the best sports talk. You're listening to the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast.
Adams with it at the 45. Adams skip it. Adams gets outside. Watch out. Hits the sideline. The Jet. Touchdown, Arkansas.
Tommy, did you see the new mascot for the Ole Miss Rebels?
I saw the pictures on social media, yeah. There's been an evolution of that thing.
Yes, there has been.
From Johnny Reb to the Black Bear to the... Yeah, it's hard to keep up with what they've... I guess if you're in the t-shirt making, embroidery business, screen printing business in Mississippi, you got a chance to do pretty well creating all new stuff again.
Yeah.
If fans are going
to
buy it.
Yeah. I mean, it's a marketing ploy, and they wanted to go with the Land Sharks. Apparently, right? That's a lot cooler than the Rebel Black Bear.
Which has been their defensive... kind of the defensive mascot.
Yeah, they put their hand above their head, right? And, you know, the Land Shark.
Anytime I hear it, I think Land Shark beer. But
it's what everybody thinks, right, about. And, you know, Marshall Henderson did it a lot in basketball, too. And
right.
They just kind of adapted it, which is also funny about the mascot evolution. You forgot that the Ole Miss student body wanted Admiral Akbar from Star Wars to be their mascot before the Black Bear. Didn't happen. So, yeah, it's been a real big evolution anyway.
Yeah, I hear Land Shark and always see that. That surfboard that's always up in bars with the Land Shark mascot, yeah, and the bite chunk. You know, that's when you, yeah, say Land Shark, I don't know why I think of beer, but I do.
I mean, I think that's how most people think, yeah, of it. But when you saw that mascot, though, I found it weird looking, for one. It doesn't necessarily look like a shark totally, but it's buffed up, it's got muscles, and it's got a shark head, and it's still in the Ole Miss uniform. But anyway, everyone was laughing about this and making fun of it. And I was just like, man. You know, when Ole Miss does stuff like this or has the problems that they've been having with their football program, they might be one of the easiest programs to make fun of. Now, this is coming from someone who grew up a Razorback fan and lives in Arkansas, which I'm sure that around the SEC or around the country, people are saying, well, Arkansas is a very easy school to make fun of, too. Well, maybe. I don't know. I don't necessarily think that's the case, but you know what? That's maybe just my bias coming out. Mm-hmm. But it just makes me wonder if you're a Razorback fan and, you know, you don't have a rival. We all know that. We all understand that. There's no rival, true rival.
We hate a lot of people, and there's not a lot of people hate us.
Exactly. It's spread out. So when you think about the teams, though, that may be the teams that you hate that are spread out, what are the teams that are the most easiest programs to make fun of?
Well, A&M's. I mean, how many Aggie jokes can we tell? We can spend the rest of the show telling Aggie jokes, right?
They have websites all over, right, the place of just list of Aggie jokes. And, right, see, that was one of the first ones that came up in my mind, too, mm-hmm, was Texas A&M. And that's not just an Arkansas thing. That's pretty much everybody.
Right.
With some of the cultures and some of the weird things that they do. I think Ole Miss is one of those programs, too, just because of the problems that they've had here in the recent years and even going back to, you know, they hired Houston Nutt and that failed miserably. And then you have the whole Hugh Freeze fiasco. And then you have stuff like this where they can't figure out what their mascot's supposed to look like. They've got all those issues going on. And it's just funny to me how there's just certain programs that make it very easy to make fun of them, to make jokes, make light of it. Maybe not necessarily in the cases, because some programs, I'm sure they're good, because there's probably people that can say, you know, funny jokes about Alabama fans. You know, what was it, Tommy, you made the joke when they had the Alabama and LSU wedding cake that didn't know that they could marry their cousins something, or what, yeah. something to that extent, something, you know, yeah. Just because that's the program.
That was an
about.
Easy one, though.
Yeah, I mean, if you softball them in like that, you got to hit them out of the park. But, you know, I just found it fascinating of which programs are the easiest to make fun of. And when it comes to college sports, when you're a Razorback fan, and I think A&M might be numero uno.
Again, I go back to we were giving Ty a hard time. I know they're not in the SEC, but Oklahoma's, for those in the western part of the state, probably up there on that
list.
Yes,
that's true. That's true. I throw Oklahoma in there. I throw Kentucky basketball in there, too. Now, I know that they've been really good and really successful.
Yeah, see, it's hard to make fun of Alabama football right now.
Because they're really good.
I mean, you're just setting yourself up for them to throw it all back on you. So, yeah, Kentucky basketball, although Kentucky basketball does not come close to sharing the same success of Alabama football, right? I mean, it's not even close.
No. And I think that's one of the reasons why you can make fun of them, at least I do, is saying, okay, so you guys have the most talented team year in and year out, all the NBA lottery picks and whatnot, and you still can't even win a national championship. I know they won one, but... I just think about any other team, or if Arkansas had the highest and most talented team in football every single year and they didn't win a title for nine straight years, you'd probably say, okay, what's going on here? You know, it's
kind
of the
same thing. The best talent money can buy.
That's right. It's kind of the same thing, too. But I'm just extremely fortunate that Arkansas, even though people will make fun of the, you know, oh, you guys have shoes over there, you know, just stuff like that, which, you know, is cheap. It's easy. But, you know, Arkansas, they haven't really had anything where just people can poke fun at him and it really gets to rage. Maybe, I know people have made a lot of jokes about the Bobby Petrino deal. He got in the motorcycle wreck, but that wasn't necessarily an Arkansas thing. That was more a Petrino thing. But there's never really been those type. You never had a mascot fiasco like this with Ole Miss. You never had some weird culture, some weird things going on. I guess the hog call might be the weirdest thing that the Razorbacks have.
You know, if you're in the state, you're born and raised here like we are, the hog call is second nature. We were born calling the hogs. So to us, it doesn't seem awkward or weird or embarrassing or any. We're so used to it. But I think if you're an outsider coming in, you're a recruit coming in, you're someone that's not from our culture, not from our understanding of what that tradition means to our state, the act of calling the hogs is a bit awkward at best.
At best. There's people that I know that have come into Arkansas for the first time to go to school or go to sporting events, and they don't really know what to think when they start hearing people saying, "Woo, pig, suey."
Well, I mean, not just here, but, you know, you see these recruits sometimes come in, and then it's time to call the hogs, and they're just a little awkward in how, do I want to do this? Do I want to get my arms in the air and my fingers, you know, moving
jazz
around?
Hands up there.
Exactly. I got to do it three times. Is that right? Three times. Yes, correct.
Three times.
So and you don't.
And you say Razorbacks on the end. On the third one.
Well, no, you're calling a pig.
Right.
You don't think it's a little embarrassing? Not even a little bit.
Do I? As an Arkansan?
Yes. In the slightest.
I think, like Tommy said, though, it's second nature.
Because anytime I'm in a situation where we're calling the hogs, I'm surrounded by my own, right?
And you're not calling it by yourself. At least I hope not.
Right.
Most of the time you're calling in Arkansas, but when you're, let's say you're in Dallas or you're in Nashville or just another place, a kind of transplant.
Well,
when
one of those organic hog calls break out, like you're at a bowl game or somewhere, you're usually with a group, and usually there's some hog call lubricant, we might just say, that's, you know, some swing lube, some some beverages that have been consumed at that point.
Yes. Liquid courage to call
the
hogs.
I would say, but to answer your question and be honest, it's probably a little bit.
Yeah. Because sometimes
it's an awkward deal. Yeah. As Arkansans, we don't think anything of it. I've often wondered, though, what do recruits that come in think of that cheer, that tradition? Does that in any way hinder recruiting? And someone with, you know, that's over the age of 60 just ran off the road thinking about that thought. But I've always wondered that. I don't know if I'm the only one that Thanks, Eva. To an 18-year-old kid, what's the perception?
Yeah, because
a 16, 17-year-old kid, what is the perception if you're from Tyler, Texas, and you're asked to get involved and do a hog call?
Yeah, John, what do millennials think about that?
Yeah. You're the voice of the generation.
Well, I guess being from Arkansas, again, it's second nature, so you don't think of it.
To us, it's no big deal.
But I do know a lot of people that have come into the state, and it's going to the University of Arkansas. There's a lot of kids, say, from Texas, and trust me, you can point out when the ones are from Texas because they let you know about it every 5 minutes. But I think that a lot of them, yeah, because here's the thing. No one in their regular vocabulary ever say woo pig suey unless it has to deal with the Arkansas Razorback athletic program.
Well, but who else says rock chalk Jayhawk, you know?
Yeah.
There's other, every school has their own, I mean, I know some of these weirdos that walk around just saying boomer, boomer.
Mm-hmm. Or roll tide.
And waiting for someone.
War Eagle. Which doesn't have anything to do with the Auburn Tigers. I know that there's a lore and story behind it, but I think that everyone's got their things, but you're talking about a pig.
Yeah.
And I think that's what everyone's wondering. Okay, a Jayhawk, it's like, hey, that's the Jayhawks. You get it, and Roll Tide. It's like, oh, this story and the lore behind it. But you're talking about a pig, and you're calling a pig.
Right.
When you think of calling a pig, you think of a farmer out there and a dirty, disgusting pig coming in for slop. Woo, pig! Sweet! Yeah. Come on over. I mean, that's what people think. And so when they think of that, they're like, okay.
But... when you get in that football stadium and it's properly executed,
with
75,000 people,
it's amazing.
It's about as good as it gets in sports.
It is. Do you need to have a certain number of people together to call the hogs to not be weird? Like, obviously, you can't do it by yourself. You do it by yourself and you're calling the hogs, it's a little awkward. Do you need 5? 10? Is there a minimum?
Tomorrow's the 1-year anniversary of the passing of Frank Broyles.
That's
and
right.
Nobody was better at leading the hog call and doing it by himself if he had to.
Than Frank Broyles. Oh, yeah. He'd always started out great.
Yeah.
And he
from
was always
passionate. From the shoe tops, as long as he could.
Passionate about it.
Yeah.
He'd throw that fist pump in the air.
Subscribe to the show on iTunes. You're listening to the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast.
Give is to Alex Collins straight up the middle. And Collins on the run. They won't catch him. Alex Collins is going to take it. Arkansas, 80 yards.
Go to the phone lines. We're now joined by Tom Murphy of the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. Tom, always appreciate you joining us. How's the weekend, man?
Oh, it was a good weekend, man. It's good to be with you guys today.
That's good to be with you. We've been talking a lot of different things that happened over fall camp and what Chad Moore spoke to the media about. One of the things I want to start with you, though, is about the offensive line. He was saying the offensive line has performed really well, but one of the big things was Yelda Froholt making the permanent move to center, it looks like, and then Austin Capps making the transition from defensive line to offensive line. It may wreak a little bit of desperation, but what do you think about those moves that Chad Morris is making and how they're just trying to find some guys that can get together on the offensive line to put something together?
Well, that's exactly right, and it's the second D lineman that has moved to the O-line. Of course, Deion Malone, the first one who did it, wound up with a season-ending knee injury. So, yeah, they've got to have some numbers over there, and when about half of them are freshmen or redshirt freshmen, then you got to supplement some. And I think Austin Capps, I mean, he's a bad dude. I mean, he'll get in there and tangle with you, and I know he would have been a big help on the D front this year, but moving him to offense possibly – could be the left guard. They say he picked up the offense pretty good. And when it came down to it, now I think this was mostly number ones on the offensive line going against some backups on the D-line. But from the talk of it, the offense was winning those plays, according to Yelda Froholt. And, you're talking about maybe some reserves on defense, but still, they need some confidence builders on that offensive front. I don't know if Yelta's move to center is going to be permanent, but it's sounding like they like what he's doing there. So it could be that he and Dylan Hayes are the top two there, and Austin Capps and possibly Kirby Adcock end up running at left guard. But they're looking for answers, and there sure has been a lot of shuffling in camp.
Okay, Froholt at center. You mentioned Capps and maybe Kirby Adcock at left guard. Right guard, I guess, would be Johnny Gibson, right?
Yep.
And then Brian Wallace at one of the tackles, and then trying to figure out the other time. Just, it's so fluid right now, and you're trying to figure it out because it kind of seems like it changes day to day, Tom, on which of the five. And it seems like Froholt, Gibson, and Wallace are locks for three of the five, and you're trying to figure out the other two.
That sounds about right. And I think the right side is going to wind up being okay. If they could get Jalen Merrick back from his issues, which were some headaches, then you've upgraded yourself, because he and Johnny Gibson were running neck and neck in spring. And then Brian Wallace at right tackle, to hear people talk about him, his mind is right, he's got the book down, his body fat is down, and he could have a good season at right tackle. And they could be that could be their go-to spot on short yardage, if that's the case. And then at left tackle, I guess Dalton Wagner would be a guy. And Noah Gatlin, the freshman, has worked out there some. And Shane Clinton, who we haven't mentioned, has kind of bounced around and is there to provide some good depth, you would think. So, and you know, about half the guys we just talked about, Wagner, Adcock, Clinton, Noah Gatlin, Silas Robinson's name has come up, all freshmen or redshirt freshmen.
It's pretty incredible. Tom Murphy of the Arkansas Democrat Gazette is our guest right now on the show. Tom, the quarterback situation is always one that everybody wants to talk about, everybody wants to know. It looks like, at least in Chad Morris, he was talking about Ty Story and Cole Kelly and some of the things that those guys were doing, got him in live situation, or didn't have him in live situations like they did with the three young quarterbacks, too, in fall scrimmage. Are we any closer to feeling out who's the quarterback going to be and what direction they're going to go with?
Well, Joe Craddock mentioned numbers, and I want to say that he said Ty Story was about 9 of 12, and he said, don't quote me on this, but this is what I, you know, this is really close. 9 of 12, that's good completion. You hope that some of those are mid-range and maybe even a couple of down-the-field throws. We know some of them are hitches because they like those. On the other side, Cole Kelly, 13 of 26, so he attempted a lot more passes, but Craddock said that 5 of those were drops. So if you give him those 5, 18 of 26 look like pretty good numbers to me. So hopefully, you know, that's against the good D, and those guys are hitting the receivers. The receivers need to hold on to the ball, but those are pretty good numbers. And from the sound of it, the run game was pretty good. So at this stage, you know, maybe I would say I don't think anything is displaced Ty Story and Cole Kelly for being 1 and 2, and it's just a matter of who would be 3, and I don't know if there's enough time for Dalton Hyatt or Connor Nolan or John Stephen Jones to break up there and get to number 1. Maybe there is, but they certainly have given them the snaps they said they were going to do.
When after practice, you're just trying to piece together some of these things when you're not able to view the scrimmages. Defensively, what storylines are standing out to you? What players do you think, when ones go on ones in the scrimmage portion, from what players and coaches are telling you, who's standing out in these stories after practice when you're getting to visit?
Right, and you're absolutely right. You're just trying to piece everything together because you haven't seen anything. So, but Scooter Harris and Dre Greenlaw, the bedrock of the defense, you know, they're the guys who are going to be making calls and making a lot of plays. Because of the way the defense is structured. Chad Morris did say that he felt like some interior guys need to get off blocks better. So maybe you're talking about T.J. Smith and Johnson Marshall and maybe McKelvin again, because he's been playing inside more than outside. So I think they feel pretty good about in. Randy Ramsey was not in the scrimmage, but I think they know what he can do. They like where he's going. Dave Richardson. I think at end they could wind up being okay. I think Sosa will still play some snaps outside. And I think the secondary, we haven't heard a whole lot of talk about that because I think they're doing all right. And Kevin Callaway had the play of the scrimmage with his interception, but we know Ryan Pulley could be a guy who can shut down a side for you, you know, a good chunk of the time. And then Santos, thank goodness for him. He provided a whole lot of detail about what happened in that scrimmage. For instance, the time he had John Stephen Jones and really could have rammed him into the ground because he was live, and he didn't. He wrapped him up, and Chad Morris didn't blow the whistle, and John Stephen Jones kept on rolling. So that was a good moment. But, you know, Santos, he's getting it done, and I think what they like what Cameron Curl has provided at the other safety, and the depth on the defensive backfield might wind up being a little better than it's been in recent seasons.
Tom, I know we talked already about the quarterbacks, but one thing I think it's fascinating that Chad Morris always mentions when he's talking about any quarterback that's on the team is two things. He mentions about getting the same guy every day. He wants to see the same guy every day, no matter the situation. He mentions that, and then he also mentions about just basically making sure that they are not only consistent, but they also battle through adversity. They have the heat. Mm-hmm. They have the things. Do you think like those are the two instances that these quarterbacks, and maybe specifically Cole Kelly and Ty Story, those are the two things that they're struggling with, is just the consistency and battling through adversity right now?
Yeah, I do think that's a direct message, particularly to Cole Kelly, about being the same guy every day. Because we've seen he could get pretty fired up over stuff, and he could be a mercurial guy. And Chad also dropped this little line, and not trying to, you know, get rah-rah with the crowd, okay? And so that is a Cole Kelly thing. You know, for instance, his touchdown against Coastal Carolina when he kind of went berserk. So I think those are messages to him. And maybe, you know, maybe Cole Kelly's a guy they would want to win the job because of his upside, because he's lost weight, he could be a great runner. I don't know that. They haven't said that. But certainly Cole Kelly has work to do to catch up with Story in terms of knowing the offense, knowing the checks, going and watching film, and just being on top of everything. So I think by the time it's over, Ty Story is going to be a much better quarterback than what we've seen in the past, and that they'll have coached Cole Kelly up into the competition's helping both those guys. There's no question about that.
Would you say, from Chad Morris's perspective and what you've just, you know, absorbed and witnessed in the press conferences, you think they feel like they're ahead of or behind schedule where they need to be at this point in camp?
You know, I kind of asked that question, and I want to say they're probably about on target with where they thought they'd be. Put a lot of offense on them early on, and just to see how they reacted to it, okay, boom, here's everything. And the retention level was good, according to Joe Craddock. And then for the scrimmage, they went with, you know, the concepts that they knew the guys knew to run a smoother type scrimmage. And then they're going to throw a little bit more on them to start this week and then start winnowing down and doing the stuff that they know they can do the best. So I would say about on target. And then defensively, getting the guys on the offensive line healed up and finding your five and starting to go with them is going to be really key. And Joe Craddock even admitted that. He's like, yeah, the quicker we can get to that point, the more we can hone in on what they do best and how they can play together the best. So that's critical. And then defensively, there's some guys with some nicks. I know some of the backup linebackers were nicked up. D. Walker and Alexi Jean Batiste did not play. They're looking to get some depth there. So continuity with more healthy guys on the field is going to be big. And John Chavis said that they probably put in more than they're going to have throughout the course of the season. So at this point now, it's about suiting it to personnel and what they can run properly. So I think they're probably about on pace on defense as well.
Tom Murphy of the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, always appreciate you joining us, Tom. Great stuff, man. We'll catch up with you on Thursday, all right?
Sounds great. See y'all.
Your number one source of local news and information you need.
You're listening to the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast.